So this is the bit that we don't really have a plan on. The Sod Show doesn't really have a plan when we talk to people like Marion Kyo, for logic and very good reasons. And that's not an insult, it's just extremely interesting, and you've got to put a little bit of a cut point on it. But we've heard from six people who are making change, and so if we could go across the board, Ron, if I could start with you, please. Did you take anything from them? Did you see some of the projects?
Yeah, I like the fact that a lot of the projects use repurpose things, you know, the wood that they make the boxes out of are repurposed. We are now in a society where we have all this one use, you know, plastics, and everything is it's actually killing our planet, you know. And my thing is, if you heal Mother Nature, you heal yourself. So I think everything we should do, we should replicate what Mother Nature does, and that's what I saw they're doing. Biomimicry. You mimic Mother Nature, because I tell people, Mother Nature, we keep betting against her, but she's like the house in Vegas. You're never going to win. You know, Mother Nature always wins. It's like, if you don't believe me, ask those clowns on Pompeii. You know, if you can find some of them. You know, we need to start taking care of this planet, because in that we are a part of the planet. I mean, we're organic matter. And that's what I see that they're doing. I mean, you got to think things in nature. It's a community.
You have six people there, I guess, who were pretty much, to your credit, inspired, very much inspired by what you had shown on the screen. And it can be a little bit hard sometimes when you're trying to make that change, and you sometimes find yourself coming up against a wall. I'll call them imaginary barriers, but barriers nonetheless. Did you come across them? Did you have a struggle? And again, for those who we chatted to on stage, and there are a lot more than that around Dublin City and around Ireland and abroad as well, is there a little bit of a message for them?
Yeah, I call them bureaucratic ass draggers. You know, they don't. And it's like you move them out the way, or you go around them, because these communities don't have to be designed the way they're designed. We're all artists. That's what everybody in this room is, artists. It's you. So with a garden, with a gardener, you choose to show what you want people to see. And the thing about a garden, rather than a piece of art that's on a wall, it can affect every sense that you have, from your taste to your smell. Your sight, everything. And as I'm sure you guys know, you put a box of flowers on the street and it changes the whole block. Just one block of beautiful colors. And the system, the powers that be, they know this. They know color therapy. They know how that affects people's psyche. It's like people, you literally, and as a couple of guys said it today, you get seduced by the garden. I mean, the soil seduces you. So we need to get back to that soil. And that's what this is all about. We need to show our artistry in whatever capacity it is. You know, we need to be here to inspire one another. And that's what this is all about.
Fergus, to give people a gist, you would have been involved in the design of Air Square in Galway. Do you take something from that? Because to your credit, and when I spoke to Roisin pre it coming on, I kind of, if you don't mind me suggesting, questioned a little bit why, not so much you were on stage, but based on your design. I understand there's a design that I would do that clients would want, and you have to, I guess, do that as well. As, do you take something from this? Do you see a change coming in? Do you see there's an evolution? Are clients demanding something a little bit different?
Yeah, Peter, this has a real resonance for me, what's been said, and Ron's film and your work, which is so inspiring. It touches something for me which is always a struggle. So I am a designer, it's my profession, it's what I do best, I think, you know. But if I do put a box of flowers on a street, it might make it look pretty, but it doesn't activate a community, it doesn't create a community. And it seems to me, watching the film and hearing all of those stories, that there's an element of adversity that you need to ignite the community spirit, you know, whether it's finding the syringes or just finding the laneway untidy, or whether it's to kind of inspire a process about growing food to make people healthier. And I'm curious to know from everybody else and the audience how I, as a designer, can make that connection again. You know, I do talk, of course, to communities when I know that they are the people who are going to use a project that I'm working on. But inevitably, most of my projects, I don't know who is going to use them. And I'll give you an example of that. Last week, thinking about this evening, last week I was visiting a school that was a project that we completed the landscape for last year. So the school, I never met the principal or any of the children, but they all moved in. So I was going back really to do a snag list to check that everything was still alive and it was kind of working. And I had designed in some vegetable beds. Now, 10 or 15 years ago, the Department of Education wouldn't really have let us do that. And we had pushed those sorts of ideas, making informal play in playgrounds and so on. Anyway, I put in the vegetable beds, the structure. I'm a facilitator as a designer. We facilitated the vegetable beds. And when I arrived at the school, there was nothing in them after a year. And I thought, well, you could have, you know, I'm obviously, people are busy, you know, but you could have sown wildflower seeds in it or something like that. So I had a chat with the principal and we've kind of tried to put something in place that will get the teachers and the students working on that. But to me, it was my failure that there was that disconnection, that those people hadn't taken it on board. My success, Ron, would have been if I hadn't put vegetable beds in at all. Then they could have phoned up the Department of Education and said, what kind of designer is that? He didn't give us any vegetable beds. And then they would really plant them very well. Do you know what I mean? You need adversity to get the community going.
Well, you do, but you also need a drive and an energy from people is the one thing. And I've come across those schools, and what some of the teachers will tell me is that we have to lock the place up because if we don't, X might happen. And also that we're off for the summertime, so things fry in the beautiful sunshine that we're having at this moment in time, and nobody's allowed in certain cases. Ali, have you, I guess, taking something from this? Do you see, maybe based on the film, the entire of Dublin changing along the way?
Yeah, there's so much to say, really. Just to say on a personal level, I get a lot of pleasure from the tiny little garden we have and behave like a little bit of a nutter going out in the morning and saying hello to something that's just bloomed. Hi there, you pretty little thing. And I'd say a lot of people do that, and it's very good for you. But also on a also kind of moving right out again, it's ultimately about social justice.
Yes,
that's what this is about, and lots of people are saying that. And Esther Gerard. Was amazing, led a whole discussion when we ran a program a few years ago about critical city issues, and one of them was something which we called the Fair City, which was a play on words. It was, you know, a pretty city, but also a just city.
Yes.
And it was all about greening, I've worked in Ballymun, regeneration, where we were turning a kind of windswept landscape with some isolated terra blocks. Nobody was doing anything with the green space. Nothing was happening in the green space. The people who lived there weren't doing anything with the green space. So it's complex. It's not like the government, the people in charge don't want this to happen. Also, the people who live there, they also need to want it to happen. So it's not like good versus evil here. It's an everybody problem. So I saw in Ballymun Regeneration how important it was to, you know, landscape flowers, plants, parks, getting people to plant a tree in their front garden. In fact, it was probably one of the most effective landscape decisions by a really great landscape architect, Dorothea Berger. Do you remember?
Yep.
And Dorothea insisted that every new house had to have a tree planted in the front garden. And so things like that make a difference. And I think of Bridgefoot Street and the whole issue there, that unfortunate standoff, as it seems, as if, you know, there are people, evil people who want to build on Bridgefoot Street, and there are good people who want to have a park on Bridgefoot Street. And actually, it's not like that. It's not black and white. There are people who say, where are we going to build the houses we need to build? And there's a site there and there's supposed to be houses on it, and there are other people who are saying, no, 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 a park is important because this area doesn't have green space. So we've got to come together and actually make it work harder. And if I'll just say the last thing, the one thing we really need to do in Dublin is make our spaces work harder. And that's what's so inspiring about, say, the Hardwick Street project and Andrew Douglas. It's actually finding all those little corners of space. And what Ron did wasn't to say, now we need a grand park somewhere. It's just to say, there's space, let's turn it into something beautiful. And there are so many spaces like that in Dublin. We need to make Dublin spaces work harder, make Dublin greener, but in inventive ways.
Can I ask you, Ali, how important is something like Bloom Fringe to Dublin City?
It's fantastic. I mean, it's wonderful because it gets people talking. I think people really appreciate it. I think they're inspired by it.
Inspired, absolutely. When I met Esther and Marion and Kells at a seminar, really great seminar, of the community up there, I was getting all this enthusiasm about Bloom Fringe, and I was thinking, I just come from a really busy day in the office, and I hadn't been on site for a week, you know the way, and I thought, these women are having a lot of fun, and I need to change that in my practice a little bit. And Ron was saying in that film, you know, if you want to speak to me, come to the garden. I said, I'm in meetings all the time. How do you do that, Ron?
You bring them. You have your gardens. I literally, on the parkway, I have a seating area that I put stumps, that I've carved seats in, and that's where I take a lot of meetings, right there on the street. And it just makes it a lot better. Because like you said, even people to come to have a meeting, 9 times out of 10, they're coming from another meeting in an office somewhere. So literally we're sitting on the street behind, fig trees and banana trees and squash growing. So, and it gets a whole nother, another element to the meeting. And what I know, people pass by and say, oh, this energizes me, you know, being here. And I was at this it's this tree people event, and this girl, she had wired the plants. She had this room and she wired the plants with these some kind of microphone things and amplified the sound. Have you guys seen this?
No.
And it's I have it on my phone. And it was the most amazing thing because there was this plant that was going ding da ding da ding ding da ding da ding ding da ding da ding, and then there was this other plant that was going womp, womp, womp. And I'm like, okay, so where's the bass that you have? Where's the bass app? She says, that's the Ethereum. I'm like, no, where's that bass? And it's literally, I'll show it on my phone. It shakes, the bass shakes. You can feel the bass even on the video when you hold it with my phone. So what she was doing, and it sounded like an orchestra with all these different plants wired and the sounds that they were giving off. And it's like, whoa, so they're real, they're alive, they're breathing, they're inhaling and exhaling, and they're giving off this vibration, you know, and to hear that, it was pretty incredible. So people say, oh, I get calm when I go into the garden. That's real, because you're getting this vibration from these plants, you know. It's what I want to talk to both of you guys about, the whole thing, us getting people, like you did the garden, and you go back, you know, and it's like, well, why haven't you guys did anything? And I tell people, I'll help you, but I'm not the help. So don't get that twisted. You know, it's like, so I'm not, it's like, ooh, what are you doing over there? That's nice, you know, and instead of getting, you know, a spade and helping you out. So that's where the culture change comes in. That's what, how do we get them to realize, no, you have to take this and own it. You know, it's just like getting a child to put that first plant in the ground, and then it's a carrot or it's a tomato. And she's, I made that. We want people to do that. And how, so we have to, you can't blame yourself because they didn't do it. I mean, the same thing happened to me. And I told the principal, I said, we spent $2,000, my personal money, I spent $2,000 on these beds to put into the school. And I want the kids in the garden. And you come back. And I mean, we put in fruit trees and the whole nine on my dime. And then you go back and no one's done anything. You signed a contract that you would take care of this. So how do we get people to take this ownership of these gardens? And that's what we have to do. We have to figure out, how do we do that? And it's harder for for me a lot of times working with African Americans because of that legacy of what was it called? Slavery.
Yeah.
And so where you have black folks, I don't touch soil. I'm not a slave.
Ron, you might not realize I've got a slightly English accent. It's very hard to tell people what to do here. So.
No, but it's like I tell people, they're like, I don't touch soil. I'm like, if you don't touch the soil, you are a slave, okay? Because that's where the gold comes from. That's where life comes from. Okay, that's where the guy got the big old house from the first place. It wasn't from you. It was from the soil. So we have to, that's the culture change that I also, on top of all the other bullshit that I got to do that to realize, no, there money grows on trees. Don't believe that, money doesn't grow on trees. Are you kidding me? You know, so those are the kind of conversations we need to have.
Okay, we're going to split it here if we can, and we will see if, do we have any questions in the room at all?
One of the things that struck me about the film, Ron, was, and I'm listening to some of the comments that the other two panel members made, is actually giving people confidence and letting them have a sense of any kind of ownership. Because the thing that struck me at the beginning is that people wouldn't have that. They wouldn't think they had any license to do anything in Ballymun other than live in their flats. And so I suppose, I think we have to get very imaginative about how you change that culture, disenfranchisement, there's the cultural haves and the cultural have-nots, and you know they will meet together, and that you know growing things and having gardens is a very middle-class thing, and it's expensive and it costs money, and so I was just really struck by how some of those young people who've been in and out of Nick got a chance to meet each other and have exchanges and then participate in something creative and wonderful. And that was the changing bit, watching them. So that was what was interesting in the film to me, psychologically and culturally.
Eating food is not a middle class thing.
No, I know.
Okay.
Gardening might be seen as that.
Even that, I mean, the bottom line is people don't know the joy in that. People don't understand that is the first self-sustaining thing that you can do is feed yourself. We're allowing corporations to not grow our food, but to make our food, which is a big difference. So take them out of the element. You know, that's why I say growing your own food is like printing your own money, because look at the money that you can save if you're healthy. Look at the money you can save if you don't have to go to the store to get. That's why this is gangster, okay? Because we're changing a paradigm when we grow our own food, you know, or when we share. Because you cannot eat all the food that you can grow. It's impossible. You'll be eating all damn day, you know. So we have to do that. And the other part is, I have kids tell me that they don't drink. You know, a lot of that is like it's self-imposed disenfranchised. It's self-imposed imprisonment in your mind, in your head. We have to change that. We have to let them know you can dream, and not only can you dream, you can make that dream a reality. Because if you can dream it, you can make it. You know, and your dream should be so big and so ginormous and so expansive that it would take you a lifetime to complete it. You know, so I have to encourage, you know, kids to dream. But a lot of that is self-imposed. And yes, you're right. We have to get creative in how we get that changed.
Have we any other questions?
Peter, just if I could respond as well. It'd be wrong not to mention Grow It Yourself, a fantastic organization with groups around the country who kind of share seed and tips and all that kind of thing, which does, I think if you're gardening on your own, it is expensive. But I think if you're gardening in a group, then you have a glut of food that you'll never get through. So.
Ali?
And we're only actually one generation away from that idea that people would grow things, middle class or not middle class or whoever, certainly in Ireland. I can't speak for anybody else, but because I know that the lovely thing about my grandmother's garden was full of, you know, plants and fruit. And I remember when my parents moved into the house that I grew up in, we came into this garden and there was a vegetable patch. Now, unfortunately, because the way things were, I think we all just got too comfortable or something and stopped the vegetable patch, turned everything into lawn. And but we're only one generation away from that. And so it's not that far away, and I'm sure we can remember it again and do it again.
As regards the middle class thing, it's a funny one, and for those of you who know, we call it sideshow bingo. I used to grow plants under my bed when I was five. Fiona, who is out in the audience, I think put up a note saying something, I don't want to misquote you, about leaving the office job to spend all the time in her allotment, and we were joking outside. I was going to send her a public tweet saying, please, whatever you do, don't take up horticulture in Ireland for a living. It really isn't worth it, but stick with the allotment. If you can move into your shed, you're perfect. But that's about as good as it gets. We have another question.
It's really just a point of information in case people here aren't aware. There's about 40 community gardens in Dublin now, and there's a network, Dublin Community Growers. So if anybody's interested in getting involved and finding out if there is a garden in their own area, they should go online and search for Dublin Community Growers, and you will find a garden near you to get involved with.
Thank you so much.
I'd just like to ask, what made you dream?
What made me dream?
Well, you said everybody else.
Well, I'm a designer. I'm a fashion designer. I'm really not a gardener. But don't tell nobody, because they give me a lot of money. To act like I know what the hell I'm doing, which I don't, but don't tell nobody. Just being dyslexic, I guess. Just seeing stuff and hearing stuff the way it's really not, and seeing a shadow, and all of a sudden that shadow turns into something. Just seeing the possibilities if I turn this around, or if I turn it upside down, or what do I get? I mean, just that whole curiosity. Like I said, we're all designers. We're all artists. You dressed yourself, I hope, except for that. Maybe that guy didn't dress himself. But that's where mine came from. I mean, you're exposing yourself to other things and realizing, wow, why is that different? You know, when I was designing, why is this Claude Montana cost, you know, $3,040 million, and this one costs $2. What's the difference? And tearing them apart and realizing the construction. So that's where my stuff comes. So mine wasn't necessarily dreaming. It was facilitating thoughts that I had, you know.
Do you think it's really significant that it's vegetables, that it's food? Because I know that the fella that was there was talking about his laneway and putting in flowers, and I do see that transform people. But there seems to be something new in, like, I work in community gardens in County Wicklow, and that started in school gardens because I kept meeting children who didn't recognise vegetables. And to me, there's something about that it's giving you this gift of something you can eat. And there's a lot of the kids that, and community gardeners that I work with, who garden in other ways. They grow flowers, actually. You know, Wicklow's full of green spaces. They're not lacking in amazing, you know, green space, but they are lacking in a connection to the earth giving them food in these ways.
All your food comes from flowers. It starts out as a flower, you know. So, but no, I'm big on flowers, and that's where the garden, that's where the designer effect comes in. I think most, like, where they grow food is ugly because everything's the same height. They grow the same thing, and it's mechanized, and it's in a row because it's made to you know, for trucks or whoever to pick it up. No, I want my garden to look like this crazy palette of intersections and colors and smells and tastes, because you have different, you might have a 15-foot sunflower next to an almond tree, next to a banana tree, next to a tomato plant. So you have, when somebody walks by, I want them to have the path of a butterfly, to have a path of a bee when they're looking at what I do, when they look at my art. And that's how I don't really plant for production or the most yield. I plant for beauty. I plant for your imagination. I plant for your mind. I plant to get you to say, damn, that's fly. You know, so that's what I do.
Any comments, Ali?
Well, I don't know. I don't think the answer is with people who live in big houses with big gardens. And that's the past anyway. So, I mean, the answer, young people have the answer. And they're not really going to, they can't expect or not, and know they're not going to be inheriting or living in large houses with large front and back gardens. They know that. And so they'll inspire amazing solutions. And absolutely, this, I agree with what Ron says about you've got to, you know, there is always an argument about this is economically advantageous or whatever. You can make money, does grow on trees. We won't get density in the city. We will not get people to want to live in cities, choose to live in cities, and they certainly won't agree to creating density in cities, and that means just more homes per square kilometre than somewhere else, if they aren't also beautiful places. And of course we can do that, but we have to do that because people aren't fools. They're going to vote with their feet and they are going to choose not to live in cities if we don't make them beautiful and green and humane and attractive. And that includes gardens. They can be tiny gardens. They can be vertical gardens. But as long as they're beautiful, the way Ron described his garden, which just sounds pure joy and delight. So.
I think, and you guys can address this more so than me, because, like I said, I'm a fashion designer.
That's okay.
These cities aren't designed for us. You know, they're designed for commerce. They're designed for transportation. They're not designed for pedestrians. They're not designed for bikes. And that has to change. You know, we need to demand and we need to see that these cities are designed for us to be convenient, for everything to be convenient for us, rather than to be convenient for that big truck to go down the street.
But there's a man driving that truck or a woman driving that truck.
Exactly.
So they, people have to demand it. People have to, you know, we do design cities for people, but maybe it's people are looking for something that isn't, they shouldn't be looking for anymore. And anyway, sorry.
Well, I mean, with us, like they killed the mass transit system in L.A. And now, because we have one of the best, literally, transportation systems in the world. And they paved everything. They paved over all the tracks. And now what how are they doing now? They're spending billions of dollars to put the same transit system back in that was already here.
If there's any consolation, Ron, you know, there's some wonderful projects in Ireland at the moment which are to do with the public realm and making spaces for people more than for cars. But that's a challenge in itself. I was at, a public meeting, you know, you talk to the community, and they were really slagging me off and saying you're going to make omelettes out of people by smashing them on a shared surface space, you know. And we're actually just at the moment opening part of it, and people are gradually getting used to cars and people having the same respect for each other as they move through the space. Mm-hmm. So I hope we're getting there. We're getting there.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to cut it there. My apologies, and I literally, with respect to all three of you, I could sit here and listen to it happen all night, but there are babysitters and some babysitters have to go home. Can I just say a little bit of a thank you, first of all, and this is also very short. Brian Green, who allows me always take centre stage. Sometimes you hear his voice on the radio. We have two sound men behind the scenes, our three esteemed guests, Ali Grehan, Fergus McGarvey, and Mr. Ron. And also to you in the audience, I know we have a large collection, a gaggle of also who travelled from the UK across to see Ron speak. They are with us tonight. And also the team who won gold in Chelsea last week. Congratulations all. Well done. Okay, that's it for everything else. It's bloomfringe.com. It's on Sideshow on Twitter at Bloomfringe. We'll see you over the weekend. Safe home. God bless.